Now we're joined by the experts at Vettafi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
We can deliver value to that advisor because that's what they're telling that they want to engage in. We want to make sure that we're putting the right pieces of content in front of them at the right time.
Brian, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me on, Nate. Really appreciate the opportunity.
All right. So look, since this is your ETF Prime debut, I thought it might be good to have you first introduce yourself to our listeners. I know prior to Vettafi, you were head of indices at JP Morgan Asset Management. Prior to that, you were over at CIBC Capital Markets and Credit Suisse. All of those roles being heavily involved with global indexing strategies. So perhaps talk a little bit about those experiences and then take us through your current role at Vettafi.
Sure. So throughout my career, I've really been lucky enough to work in almost every aspect of the indexing business. I got my start at Credit Suisse building bond indices when those were still mostly run by big investment banks. And at my time there, I was able to also build out a suite of quantitative investment strategies focusing on commodities and FX, interest rate derivatives. So I really got my feet wet over there. Took it over to CIBC, where I was in a structuring role, multi-asset, doing commodities and equity derivatives as well. In 2019, JP Morgan tapped me to head indexing, and that role was really focused on factor products, both in equities and fixed income. Also, we built some carbon transition indices at the time. So a number of different initiatives over at JP Morgan. But a few years ago, when I got the call to come and run the index business at what was then Alerian and quickly became Vettafi, I knew there would be a much more interesting opportunity to really put all these different skills to work. And the last few years, we've really built out this business, starting with two index companies, and then we've acquired since Robo Global and EQM Indices.
Yeah, it's amazing. Actually, talk more about that, because right now, I show that Vettafi has over 300 indices under its umbrella, including indices powering 88 ETPs with some $34 billion in assets. And it's interesting because I'm not sure some people realize the behemoth that Vettafi is starting to grow into on the indexing side. So tell us more about that and everything you're continuing to build out here.
That's right. We've really grown quite fast. Since I got here, we've almost tripled in the number of the amount of assets under management or under indexing. And, you know, we really want to be able to compete for every new indexed ETF that's out there. So some of that growth has come from acquisition of buying Robo Global, who's one of the first leaders in disruptive technology and thematic investing. And some of it's come through winning business from our competitors, some switch opportunities and new things. We haven't launched very many indices under the Vettafi brand, but we're starting to. We recently had a couple of launches up in Canada with CI Financial on an enhanced value and enhanced momentum indices. So we're really excited about, bringing all these brands together. Every time we acquire one of these companies, it's not just about bringing in the assets and bringing in the indices. It's really about bringing in the people. And each one of these acquisitions has come with amazing people that have really moved the needle on what our capability set is.
Did I see correctly that you're powering some of the O-shares ETFs?
That's right. So one of the companies that formed the original Vettafi was a company called S-Network, which was often behind the scenes of other people's factor indices. The team at O-shares had a really great idea on specific factors and weighting algorithms they wanted to use. And they really needed an index provider to supply a starting universe and to bring that idea to life, right? And so we partnered with them many years ago on an entire suite of products focused on quality dividends.
All right. So I love that you just said bring that idea to life, because you may not be aware of this. Last year, you actually had one of my favorite recent quotes, which I did talk about on the podcast at that time. I believe this was following the acquisition of EQM indexes. But let me read this. You said, quote, "A great investment idea can often remain just that, an idea. but with a well-constructed index, great investment ideas can become great investments. And I just love that, Brian, because I feel like investors only see the end product, right? They see the ETF or they see the mutual fund, but they don't always think about the index construction that led to that. And so I'd love to have you just talk more about that process at a high level. If you could just take us behind the scenes on how a great investment idea actually does turn into a great investment.
Sure. Well, first, the index development process is by its nature iterative. People show up with an idea and then you have to test it and you have to test it over and over again. And so we tried to design our index platform, which we call the Index Factory, in such a way that was set up for partnership and set up for that the iterative nature of the process. Being a true partner to the ETF issuer community really means having the ability to test new ideas using innovative data sets and open architecture. We have to be able to not just to show results, but really answer the why of how did we get those results. And how is it going to impact a client portfolio, right? What is the factor exposures? What does the attribution look like? So those are the questions that we find ETF issuers increasingly want answers to, and advisors really want to understand what they're buying and what's inside the ETF. So that's what we hope to achieve with our platform.
Can you talk more about the data sets? Because obviously that's a critical component here when you're talking about building indices. I'd love to just hear more about the data that Vettafi is utilizing here.
Sure. We do rely on some of the largest data companies to supply us the core of what we do. So companies like ICE and FactSet, who have, big scalable processes. So as much as possible, we rely on those big firms. But ultimately, when someone has an innovative data set, the ability to quickly onboard that and test it, bring it into our data quality systems, and try to use it in an index is increasingly important. So we've tried to remain open architecture, and allows us to work with some really cool, innovative companies around that.
All right. So given your role and everything that Vettafi is now involved in, as you just described, I'm very curious, what are you seeing in terms of future index construction trends? Like, where is the puck heading? What are the hot topics of conversation right now?
I think there's three interesting areas I'd like to cover. The first being the concept of quality. I think everyone knows right now that they need to be laser focused on quality companies and are using traditional quality indices to do it. But what we've had is this historic run-up in interest rates over the last few years, and this massive overhang of debt that came during COVID that is going to start to come due over the next few years. Between 2025 and 2028, companies are going to have to refinance a lot of debt, and the amount of debt at significantly higher interest rates. When they do that, it could impact some companies' ability to continue to grow their dividend or buy back their stock, right? So figuring out which companies are more exposed is not rocket science, but it does require us to rethink the way the quality metric works. So what we've tried to do, for instance, is focus on profitability and solvency and look at forward-looking metrics of solvency to try to get in front of this trend, right?
Do you think we could see a second wave around smart beta ETFs? I feel like I've talked about this a little bit recently, but I feel like smart beta has been put on the back burner a little bit with the rise of active ETFs over the past several years. But with what you just described, obviously this would be built around an index looking to rethink the quality factor. Do you see a second wind or second wave for smart beta ETFs?
I really do, Nate. And the reason is, when interest rates are really, really low or negative in some countries, correlations rise, right? Companies can take on as much debt as they want, and it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. But now where we're back to somewhat normalized interest rates, historically normalized interest rates, these things matter a lot more. Debt service is certainly one of it, but even traditional value and growth factors are going to start coming into play in a much more predictable way during the next cycle. So we think this is the right time to look at your factor exposures and evaluate what are the factors that are going to be able to outperform in the next cycle.
Okay, so rethinking the quality factor. You said you had three trends. What are the other two?
The second one is around demographics. Again, this is like an obvious, somewhat of an obvious crisis that's coming. I think we heard yesterday China, you know, published their growth estimate for next year at around 5%. That's significantly lower than they've traditionally grown over the last few decades. And why is it happening? I think everyone understands that they have a demographic crisis on their hands. And that demographic crisis is not just hitting China. We can see it in Japan, in Taiwan, South Korea. And the beneficiaries of that demographic crisis may be some countries that have favorable demographics, like India or Brazil. And then the developed market side, you know, Australia is a growing country. Canada is a growing country. So rethinking the way our international exposures work to try to get a little bit away from market cap weighting might be appropriate given what is this next obvious crisis coming, right, in the form of demographics. We tried to rebuild some of our developed markets and emerging market suite to take demographics into consideration. And we see clients really interested in that concept.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I know a lot of investors and advisors, demographics are a key consideration that they look at, particularly when investing in international markets. And so with what you just described there, it sounds like high level, if we're putting this through the index construction process, it would be weighting towards countries with more favorable demographics as opposed to market cap weighting. Is it that simple?
It is that simple. Within each country, we're still going to hold the same proportion of each of the companies that qualify, but we're just reweighting the countries to give us more favorable demographic exposure.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Okay, and then the third trend you're seeing is?
Well, the third trend is we're really trying to rethink the way broad-based sector indices work. I think traditionally people would just buy large cap sector exposure and use, you know, asset allocation techniques to adjust those exposures. And, you know, the thematic world is often disrupting some of those sectors. So the first thing we did is we tried to look at energy as an example. We have this 2050 goal, right? We're supposed to be 100% clean energy by 2050. So I think a lot of ETF issuers and index providers have come up with energy transition strategies that are really focused on just that clean energy bucket. But at Vettify, we think the path to getting to 100% clean energy still goes through fossil fuel companies. So what we've done is tried to design something that would, in a straight line, move us from fossil fuels to clean energy over the next 26 years to get to 2050, but do it in such a way where we're reweighting this combined portfolio to give us, you know, that exact exposure. So in 2015, 15% of our energy mix was clean energy, and 15% of the index should represent that, both in terms of number of names and market cap. What's really interesting about putting these two things together is both energy and clean energy are quite volatile, but together they're less volatile. And if you own a clean energy index, over time, all the good clean energy companies are going to get acquired by fossil fuel companies that are sitting on lots of cash flow that they can't necessarily reinvest in more fossil fuel projects. So it's really about owning your own disruption and being able to actually continue to hold those more technologically advanced companies that are going to get acquired by the larger companies.
This is another one I find really interesting. I'm not sure if you saw over the weekend, the Wall Street Journal actually had a piece on BlackRock, and the gist of the piece was they were talking about how BlackRock has moved away from the ESG acronym and really just ESG investing as a whole, but that they were focusing on this transition. And I think to what you're speaking to, certainly, you know, the energy transition, but also just investing in companies that are building out the clean energy infrastructure. And I feel like that is where ESG has evolved to. It's moved much more in that direction. I guess, would you agree with it? It sounds like it from an index construction standpoint. Any thoughts on what we saw from ESG over the past several years to where it may be heading and moving forward?
I completely agree. I think people are looking for a bit of a decentralized approach to ESG. They want to attack certain areas, clean energy being, you know, on the forefront. But there's a number of ways to be able to do it. And I think they want more targeted exposures. And that'll also go for the S and the G in ESG, right? They want an index based on social justice or pure governance. And, you know, they don't necessarily want to mix those three factors together.
No, I think that's well said. I mean, I've often talked about how, from an investor's perspective, it's really difficult because they may look into an ESG ETF, a broad-based ESG ETF, and question why certain companies are owned. And the reason why may be they're scoring really well in energy, which outweighs maybe some of the negative things they have on the S or the G side. But that can be difficult for an investor to get their head around. And so I think you're right. By targeting each of these, it's much more understandable to the end investor. But Brian, we're going to have to leave it there. Great having you on the podcast. I'm sure we'll be doing this again. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Nate. Really appreciate it.
That was Brian Coco, head of index products at Vettafi.